This paid commercial may not represent the views of Hubbard Broadcasting Incorporated or Federal News Radio. Statements and opinions of this broadcast are solely those of individual contributors or advertisers as indicated. Federal News Radio does not take responsibility for those statements or opinions and accepts no responsibility or liability for any inaccuracy, errors, or omissions reported during this program.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. Federal Tech Talk is the show that opens up the world of technology to the federal government. Every week, John speaks with public and private sector IT experts to help you understand some of the IT trends and challenges that your agency may be facing. Federal Tech Talk on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Now your host, John Gilroy.
Welcome to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector. Good morning, Gunnar. How are you?
I'm great. Thanks for having me, John.
Well, you know, you pick up the newspaper, you go to Google News, you see Red Hat making all kinds of money, very successful in the commercial world, very successful in the federal world. States and county governments are using Red Hat. You know, I'm surprised that the taxi drivers on Wisconsin Avenue aren't talking about Red Hat. So I decided to drag you folks in here once again and say, now, what's going on with Red Hat? You know, I mean, it doesn't make sense that a company with your profile, North Carolina, I mean, come on now, you guys should be from California. The cool guys are from California, you know? Maybe you really aren't that cool a company. And I thought we'd bring in, and there are some terms that are floating around the industry. And many of my listeners are reading the publications and listening to Federal News Radio and going, well, geez, open source, open shift, open office. I mean, they're open to new words, but some of these words get confusing. I thought maybe for the benefit of our listeners, we'd go through some of these terms. But first of all, we got to find out about your background. Gunnar Hellickson sounds like someone from Sweden or Norway or something. Tell us about your background, how you wound up with Red Hat, please.
Yeah, sure. So Norwegian, for the record. and so, although I grew up in Hawaii, which makes me a walking contradiction. So, let's see, we want to talk about Red Hat, right? So Red Hat is, we just announced that we made $1 billion in revenue in 1 year. Isn't that amazing?
Out of nothing from 10, 15 years ago.
Well, and literally out of nothing because we're selling free software, right? And so first of all, it's absolutely humbling. We're very excited about it, and we're very excited about what that means for open source and open source communities. I mean, we've seen over the last 10 years, both commercial entities like Wall Street and healthcare and the public sector folks, you know, federal agencies, state, local. I mean, they are adopting open source in a way that I didn't even imagine was possible when I joined Red Hat 7 years ago.
I was at a meeting last week. A fellow named Todd Park was speaking.
Sure.
And he opened his mouth, and I think he said, open, open, open. And he's got a dynamic speaker, by the way. This guy really is thrilling. I mean, He could go to Hollywood and get a job, I think. I mean, he's really a dynamic fella. And I think the imprimatur from the White House is on open source. I mean, this is what they encourage, and everyone knows about the 25 points. Everyone knows about Steve taking over and talking about open source. In fact, you folks are involved with a community called Open Source for America, OSFA. What's that all about?
Yeah, so Open Source for America, we founded it in 2009. This is right on the heels of the Obama administration's Open Government Directive. And what we saw was a whole lot of interest in open source and a lot of longtime users of open source, but really not a voice for advocacy for open source, not one voice with all the companies that were benefiting from open source. I mean, that's, of course, Red Hat, but it's also Sun and, honestly, dozens of smaller companies that were making their living building and supporting open source software. These guys had no representation either in the administration or in Congress. And so what we founded this organization to kind of help each other out, compare notes, say, hey, have you gone through CUMM criteria before? No, I haven't. Oh, here, I've done it, so let me help you out. It's actually proven very successful. We were we found government publications that disparaging open source, and so we're on the lookout for those, and we'll go find those documents and then go talk to the people who wrote them and start educating them about how open source can help them, and how open source is not scary, and it's, you know, not a bunch of, as someone said, open source isn't a bunch of communists, you know?
Right. Well, we have a wide range of listeners, but I don't think anyone thinks Red Hat, they're Reds, they're communists, and open source is bad. No, I think people are open-minded to it. They just have to find out more.
Yeah.
So you can go to opensourceforamerica.org, nonprofit, and you can get case studies on that. And it talks about events. There's an event, I think, maybe last month in Reston for this whole community, wasn't there?
Yeah, that's right. And we've got the Military Open Source Working Group, which is kind of affiliated with Open Source for America. Those guys are doing some amazing work in the DoD, getting DoD programs to start sharing information and even sharing code with each other. Really vibrant community.
And there was a DoD report, I think maybe last year, that I heard of that said, hey, look, boys and girls, you know, open source is for real and it's safe and it's okay to even consider it. This is the report that came out, right?
Yeah, that's right. So, in fact, one of the most important events in the kind of the history of open source in government was the release of the, we call it the DoD open source memo in 2009. And Mr. Winogrand, the DoD CIO at the time, came out and said, hey, everybody, open source is exactly commercial software. It's nothing special. You don't have to do anything special with it. It follows all the rules that all the other software follows. And that legitimized open source almost overnight. Now, DoD had been using open source for quite some time before that. But that memo really got all of the doubters and all the skeptics kind of in line. It was an amazing milestone for us.
I was in Dave's office over in the Pentagon, and I don't know if you've ever been in there, but it's like this metal enclosed thing. You have to leave your cell phone outside to get in there, and you go, God, I'm really safe here. I mean, it's a very safe, comfortable place to be.
If
someone who's that obsessed with security, I think he's in a different position now, would have an office like that, he's saying, no, open source is fine. I would think that at least some of my listeners could open their eyes.
Yeah.
So the whole theory behind this is this strange little community-based software where people say, well, the theory is many eyes, few bugs, where we can come up with an idea, kick it out, throw it around, see if it makes sense, and get a lot of different input. And if you get a lot of input, then we can actually move the ball along and increase what typically is called a kernel or a lot of different terms for this. But the open source. So this is pretty much what open source is all about: is having a community based way to develop software. More like the groups of animals, a whole bunch of eyes seeing everything and moving in a herd together. It's almost like that, isn't it?
Well, now I'm on the record to saying open source is like a bunch of animals.
There are a bunch of animals out there.
but it is true that. And everyone learned at a very, very young age, your mother told you, it's always nice to share. That's fundamentally what open source is about. Open source is about the fact that we can do more when we work together. And when everyone is laboring under the burden of some really expensive proprietary software, which doesn't differentiate you, right? It's mostly going to be plumbing, just kind of the basic software that you need to run your operation or accomplish your mission. Why purchase, something expensive and specific to one company when you can use open source software, and then you are sharing, the maintenance burden with all of the other users of the software. And it's proven to be a really, really powerful idea.
And it works in many different areas. I think Linux is one of the operating systems that's benefited from that, and there's different flavors of Linux, and that's what Red Hat's all about.
That's right.
When I think of Red Hat, I think more of Red Hat on servers and really doing some very, very powerful applications. It's almost like, this is not your father's Oldsmobile. This is like a souped-up 5-liter Mustang. It's almost like, well, it's open source, but guess what? It's really fast. So
yeah,
it's just because it's open source doesn't mean, this is your cousin who got C's in high school. No, this is really the powerful stuff, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. We run on some of the largest supercomputers in the world and, running on the phone in my pocket right now. So that's actually one of the great things about open source is that when you have that many people collaborating together, you have to accommodate a lot of different opinions and a lot of different use cases. And so what that means is that the software becomes more modular, right? The software becomes broken down into separate components, and each component gets optimized for particular use cases, right? Which is why, back in the day, you can't take a operating system off of IBM mainframe and go stick it in a phone. That's just not practical. But because you have this huge community, literally millions of developers, it actually gives you the ability to go on a mainframe or down on a phone or whatever you like. It's wonderful.
we're kind of obtusely referring to Android based on
Linux. Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Kind of connecting the dots here. When we get back, we'll talk about more terms and some confusion involved with open data and maybe some terms like OpenShift and OpenOffice. Mm-hmm. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector.
The leader in informational seminars on federal benefits, financial, and retirement planning, NITP was established in 1984 and is 100% devoted to federal planning seminars. The mission is to educate federal employees and enable them to make fully informed decisions regarding their financial futures and retirement options. Through a variety of teaching platforms and seminars, NITP has the experience to help with your planning needs. Visit NITPinc.com. That's NITPinc.com for more information.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at advancedalliance.com for more information on potential Alliance Small Business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliance.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
What is transformational leadership? How have government leaders successfully led transformations and what they considered before undertaking such initiatives? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with Bob Reasoner, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Leader's Guide to Transformation, on the Business of Government Hour.
Concerned about your health? Then be sure to catch the groundbreaking radio show Essentials of Healthy Living, brought to you by Village Green Apothecary in Bethesda. Join hosts Dana Lake and Kevin Passero as they bring you the latest news about traditional and alternative medicine, dietary supplements, nutrition, and healthy living. Tune in every Sunday at 10 a.m. on 1500 a.m. Visit myvillagegreen.com, listen to past shows, and discover other healthy living resources.
Essentials of Healthy Living is sponsored by Megafood and Gero Formulas.
Today is the day to make the switch to decide you're going to choose to save money with Ackerman Security Systems.
I was looking at ways to reduce expenses at home. I checked my alarm monitoring bill, and wow, I made the switch to Ackerman with no cost to switch and only $18.95 a month. Now I save $25 a month. That's $300 a year.
Why wait? Call Ackerman today and receive 2 months of basic monitoring free. Call 888-999-1070 or AckermanSecurity.com.
As IT becomes more ingrained in agency missions, the acquisition process will need to become more responsive in meeting the needs of the technology workforce, especially since ongoing trends suggest 2012 will be a watershed year for reform. Join AFSEA Bethesda on May 24th at the Bethesda North Marriott as chief acquisition officers and senior procurement executives discuss how agencies and industry can work together to improve technology acquisition. Register today at afseabethesda.org/maybreakfast.
Are you on Facebook? Do you Twitter? So does Federal News Radio. Follow us on Twitter at twitter.com/fednewsradio or join the Federal News Radio Facebook group. For the latest in federal news and government contracting, visit our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector. Well, most of my listeners know what a red hat is. I know red hat, blue hat. I can maybe get my primary colors down. My wife says I don't know much more beyond that. But there are some terms in this industry that, you know, I'm kind of confused about, and I think many of my listeners are kind of confused about, and maybe they're not sure enough or confident enough to question, but hey, we got the expert, and we might as well talk about it. In the first block, we talked about Open Source for America. We kind of attempted to define open source. Tell me about projects like OpenStack and CloudStack, and what are the differences here, and how do they fit into this whole picture of making a transition to the cloud?
Yeah, sure. So I think it all started with Amazon, frankly. Amazon Web Services has done an amazing job with their EC2 service, right? So this is the idea that you can log into a website, say, I want 3 big servers and 2 small servers, and click a button, and they'll charge your credit card, and pow, those servers are provisioned immediately. So everyone saw that and said, how do I do that for myself? And as it turned out, NASA wanted to do something like that, and Rackspace, who's competing with Amazon, wanted to do something like that. So together they started an open source project called OpenStack. And that project's been going on for a few years. It's got a good amount of momentum. Red Hat just joined the project along with IBM just a couple weeks ago, actually. Red Hat has actually had developers on this project for quite some time. OpenStack allows you, again, to create a kind of Amazon on-premise, an Amazon inside your data center. It's not a complete solution to all of your cloud problems, right? There's a whole bunch of other things you need to worry about, but it is a fantastic platform to begin delivering resources to your end users without you getting in the way. It's all self-service, all self-provisioned.
You know, the word provisions you just used there, mm-hmm. when I think of provisions, I think of restaurants for some reason, and food and bringing
yeah,
the food.
Yeah.
But in the technical community, I think word provision is used with a lot of telephone services and a lot of people in that area talk about provisioning this and provisioning that, mm-hmm. which means is, hey, the power's good, the connection's there, it's patched, it's ready to go, bye.
Yeah. So
it's all it is.
Yeah, so that's right.
The provisioning is just that. It's really like a bare bones. It's like, Well, here's the plate, bye, and you have to move from there. And so what this project does is it tries to attempt to help listeners make the transition. Is this parallel, similar to maybe Apache? Is this a parallel or a completely different world what Apache does?
So the Apache Web Server and the Apache Foundation are also open source projects set up similarly. Apache has a number of projects under its umbrella. One of them actually is called Delta Cloud, which is really interesting. And that's a project that we started, I guess, about 3 years ago now. And what Delta Cloud does is it says, okay, maybe you're running VMware for your virtualization over here, and you're running OpenStack over here. Maybe you want to use Rackspace and Amazon. What if you wanted to do all 4 of those things at the same time, which a lot of folks do? They want to be able to compare prices, right, and go to the cheapest provider for a particular time. They want to make sure they don't get locked in to one provider or another. And so what Delta Cloud lets you do is have one management interface, right, one system for managing this stuff, and you don't care where this stuff is provisioned. Delta Cloud goes and figures it out for you. So you don't get locked into one guy's management tools. It's a really exciting project. It's very cool.
So if you're working for an agency, and I'm trying to put myself in the role of an IT professional working for an agency, and you get the mandate to, okay, move some of these applications to the cloud, mm-hmm. The reason you'd even want to learn about OpenStack is because it will give you a framework for making the transition to a provisioned server. Is that a good word to use, a framework?
Yeah, no, I think that's right. I think what a lot of people do is they see the kind of scale that Amazon can muster or that Rackspace can muster, right? And they're like, I want to do that, right? You know, right now for a lot of agencies, if you want to stand up a new server, you got to, you know, fill out a requisition and you got to wait 3 months for somebody to buy the hardware and do the bid and go through all this business. On Amazon, you can provision a server in seconds. And they want to provide that level of service internally. So OpenStack is a great way to do that. We have a product called Red Hat Enterprise Virtualization, which does that. We've got a product called CloudForms, in fact, which does exactly that. CloudForms, though, uses that Delta Cloud stuff I was talking about to let you have one view towards all of these little silos, right? Right now, for a lot of folks, they've got all kinds of different infrastructures, right? Some of it's physical, some of it's virtual, some of it's off in a cloud. And the problem is a lot of that stuff ends up broken up, again, into silos that you can't manage. So we've got a CloudForms project, again, open source, that lets you manage all of those as if they were the same thing. It's really cool.
I was reading Network World today, and one of my favorite writers is David Linthicum, mm-hmm. and he talks about the cloud a lot, and he said, stop the presses, hold the front page. New study from Cisco says that moving to the cloud is difficult. tongue-in-cheek, right. Of course, but but it's not snap your finger. I mean, provisioning a server with AWS is snap your finger, and that's great. But so what? I mean, you have that's to take and how do you make that transition, and what kind of security considerations do you have to have?
You know, for again, for a software guy, I spend an awful lot of time talking about process, and it's because of exactly what you're talking about. Moving to the cloud is definitely not a problem of which technology to choose. The thing for a lot of agencies is I can buy all kinds of technology which could ostensibly make me faster, but if I don't fix my internal processes to take advantage of this technology, I haven't really made a meaningful improvement. There's a great story that Henry Sienkiewicz over at DISA talks about his race cloud, right? When they were building the cloud at DISA, they made sure that they were able to take P cards. Right, they wanted somebody to be able to basically swipe a credit card and provision a server and create a new server on DISA Race. They could technically they could stand up that server in 20 seconds, 30 seconds, but it actually took 3 days to get that purchasing card through the purchasing system and through the DoD acquisition process in order to get the server. So, no matter how fast the Race Cloud could do it, it still took the purchasing system 3 days. So a lot of the challenges of cloud and getting a lot of the results people want from cloud are process problems and not technology problems.
One process that many of my listeners are concerned with is security.
Yeah, sure.
And people talk about FISMA and FedRAMP and all kinds of concerns about, well, if I move to the cloud, I'm going to have some concerns here. Now the people that try to make information transparent, I think of maybe civilian agencies that may want to have information about traffic or something like that, or weather is pretty easy. Mm-hmm. Now you get to the people who are in the healthcare community. Now they're very wary of making things transparent because they're going to lose their job if they make things transparent. They have to be careful about that.
Yeah.
And so what Red Hat has done is trying to assure potential purchasers that, no, we comply with common criteria, so we're a safe bet.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. So we just received our 15th Common Criteria certification for Red Hat Enterprise Linux, which, by the way, is on its 10th anniversary, which is pretty exciting. So 15 certifications in 10 years. And this certification in particular is focused on the virtualization features of Red Hat Enterprise Linux. So Red Hat, you can actually run on a Red Hat machine, you can run as a virtual machine, as a virtual guest, another Red Hat machine, a Windows machine, if you like. And we've got some technology which is based on SE Linux, which was actually developed by the NSA. And that technology protects each of these guests from each other and from their host, right? So if, say, you're running 4 virtual servers on top of a Red Hat machine, if the Windows machine, and of course it'll be the Windows machine, right? If the Windows machine gets compromised and somebody is able to break out of the virtual machine, you will still be protected, and they will not be able to attack the other virtual machines that are you're sharing the hardware with. That's what we've certified under Common Criteria this week. We think that it is a hugely important technology. The fact that we got it certified means it's an internationally recognized certification. That means we can actually go into agencies and say with a straight face that this technology is safe. Somebody has actually reviewed this. So this is why we like the Common Criteria process, by the way. It provides us an independent third-party evaluation that actually backs up our security claims.
And if you're a Twitter follower, RHEL is the hashtag to follow some of this information about their enterprise product. That's right?
Yeah, that's right. RHEL, RHEL, or Red Hat Enterprise Linux.
Great. I have to take a quick break and come back. We come back, talk more about Red Hat and security and maybe the cloud and some more terms that may be confusing for some of my listeners. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector.
And now, Technology Insights with Tom Frana, President and CEO of Vion, speaking with John Gehring, former CIO and Director of Strategic Planning for DISA, and now an executive at Vion.
Is there a benefit that you never thought you'd ever see come out of the capacity services model?
How technology refreshment has evolved. We never anticipated keeping stuff on the floor for more than 3 years. And all of a sudden, here's this idea that says, wait a minute, you can save 10% per year if you keep this stuff on the floor and don't just go out and buy it because you can. Let's keep it there and let us help you and trust us to tell you when it should be replaced. Done right, it is a not-to-worry source of infrastructure. And it is scalable. It matches capacity to demand.
For over 32 years, Vion has been the storage experts in the most demanding data center environments. For almost 10 years, Vion has pioneered storage capacity on demand with a level of peace of mind service its customers have come to expect. To hear more of Technology Insights, visit Vion.com, V-I-O-N.com. The Ballistic Missile Defense Report, provided by Raytheon.
Germany may become one of the first nations to integrate Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 onto its naval vessels, according to the German Chief of Naval Operations, Axel Schimpf. Though the German government has not made a decision on whether to adapt its fleet of frigates for ballistic missile defense, the enhancements would allow Germany to participate in the Obama administration's European phased adaptive approach, embraced by NATO. Depending on the political decision and funding, the German Navy stands ready to provide sea-based capabilities, Schimpf said.
5 million hours of experience, 20 direct hit intercepts, unmatched engineering. Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 is preserving freedom at home and around the world. Now, Raytheon engineers are developing the next generation SM-3. When seconds matter and there's no margin for error, Raytheon's Standard Missile 3 delivers. In fact, there's nothing standard about it. Raytheon, customer success is our mission.
To win and deliver government healthcare contracts successfully, you need to align with the right teaming partners. Moreover, with over 900 healthcare IT initiatives proposed in the 2013 federal budget, you need to begin building your healthcare IT teams now. Meet Tech Systems. Every year, Tech Systems deploys thousands of IT professionals at over 5,500 client sites nationwide, including more than 65 government agencies. Tech Systems Government Services offers a dedicated healthcare division to deliver practical healthcare IT solutions to the federal, state, and local government. No matter where you are on your meaningful use journey, Tech Systems can guide you through the transition. From providing managed services that tailor end-user training by role and workflow, to providing BI solutions that get you closer to your quality care goals, Tech Systems, our people make IT possible. Learn more at TechSystems.com, TekSystems.com.
This is John Gilroy from Federal Tech Talk. You know, I've done over 260 interviews here on Federal News Radio, but many listeners still ask, what does your company do, John? My company is called Armature. For the past decade, we have worked with organizations that have programs for conformity assessment, accreditation, standards, and policy management. Is your agency responsible for conformity assessment? If so, then please visit our website, armaturecorp.com. We can help.
Here are some tips for a fun-filled weekend with Marvin Bond, editor of Recreation News. I'm feeling a bit adventurous. Any deals out there for me?
You bet. Head out to the Adventure Sports Center International in Western Maryland's Garrett County. This is a really unique man-made rafting course that will actually host the Olympic Trials in 2014. You can get 20% off a rafting experience by checking out page 44 of Recreation News or, of course, at recreationnews.com.
How about something a little less strenuous?
How about a real small-town spring festival? Strasburg, Virginia, at the west end of I-66, is having its 30th annual Mayfest, May 18th to 20th. There's food, of course, and live entertainment, a parade, a street dance, and interestingly enough, there's a pottery auction and sale that actually salutes the town's heritage as a pottery-making center of the Shenandoah Valley. You can check it all out on page 28 or see mayfeststrasburg.com.
Marvin Bond is the editor of Recreation News. I'm Beth Reardon.
The Department of Defense faces some big changes in the coming years. I'm Federal News Radio's DoD reporter, Jared Serbu. We help you track those changes every Wednesday afternoon from 2 to 3 with On DoD. Each week, we'll talk one-on-one with defense experts and senior managers about the policies, programs, and innovations that affect warfighters and how the military will continue to meet its mission. That's On DoD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM and federalnewsradio.com.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today we are speaking with Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector. There's certainly a bunch of blogs out there, and I'm sure there's many, many blogs on Red Hat, all kinds of them. Are there any blogs that my listeners may benefit from reading that involve Red Hat? Can you suggest one?
Yeah, so they'll pay me to tell you to visit redhat.com/government, right? So redhat.com/government is the kind of the homepage for the Red Hat Public Sector Group. That's federal, state, local, education. If you like, you got my blog, which is A Technology Job is No Excuse.
Easy to remember,
I hope. And of course, mention my Twitter feed, G Helix. I send out stuff that I enjoy on a pretty regular basis.
And I will be blogging about this interview at my company blog at Armature Corp. And and maybe get a picture of you there and talk about some behind the curtain comments. Or what did he really say in the block about that? He said, I hate your guts, John. Oh, really? That's what he said. He walked out there and he threw the chair at you. Yeah. You know, we've had people in the studio here from Cloudera.
Mm-hmm.
Mike Owen, we talked about Hadoop, and there's just, I mean, there's so many new terms, open source, you know, OpenShift, OpenOffice, CloudStack, OpenStack. So tell me about big data, and where does Red Hat fit in, and where does this thing called Hadoop fit in? I mean, might as well get us these terms cleared up. It seems like two complete different worlds or three complete different worlds, but maybe some people think you compete with Hadoop. I don't see it, but maybe delineate that for our listeners.
Yeah, sure, sure. So Hadoop. So first of all, the big data, framing big data for us is big data. We've always been able to accumulate tons of data, but it's always been in a structured way, right? It's like a spreadsheet, right? Rows and columns. Big data is mostly being driven by this idea of unstructured data, right? The idea that I don't have to structure the data before I can start asking questions of it. And what's cool about that is it means that I don't have to know what the questions are first before I build a system. I could just throw gobs of data into my system and then figure it all out later. That's really nice for a couple reasons. First, it means that there's not a lot of overhead when I want to start storing data. It used to be you spend months trying to be a data architect and figure out what questions you're going to ask and then organize the data appropriately. Don't have to do that anymore. The second thing is the tools for analyzing this data. Hadoop is one of these tools. The tools for analyzing these data have gotten, first of all, they're mostly open source now. A lot of them are open source. You got tools like the R statistics language and Hadoop as a analysis tool. These allow you to query in this unstructured data in a really, really simple way. Red Hat doesn't have a whole lot to do with that. We're happy to host the workloads, of course, on top of our Red Hat Enterprise Linux. But we recently made this acquisition of a company called Gluster, which we're now calling Red Hat Storage. So Red Hat Storage fixes the other part of the big data problem, which is, okay, I'm the VA and I've got a petabyte of data in Baltimore, say. Now, what if I need to make that petabyte of data available in Brooklyn? Okay, in a lot of cases, that means getting a big fat network pipe and saturating that. What Gluster's done is they figured out something very clever, which is a way of mirroring that data over using just software. Used to be you'd have to buy a pretty expensive piece of hardware or a pretty expensive piece of proprietary software in order to do that data sharing across geographies. And Red Hat Storage lets you do that with open source software for free and using anyone's hardware. So I could have a EMC or a NetApp or whatever I liked inside all these data centers. And if I need new capacity, I could just buy the cheapest, most effective piece of hardware I can, and it plugs right in and nobody's the wiser.
So Hadoop would be a tool used for analysis of the data.
Mm-hmm, that's right.
And Red Hat maybe is the motor.
Yep.
And Gluster helps you to manage that data.
So that's correct.
Complete,
yeah.
Separate worlds. I mean,
yeah.
Complete different worlds. And you know, you got the motor doing one thing, and you can have a bakery truck, you can have a tow truck, whatever it is you want to tow around. It's got nothing to do with another. I think people think that, you know, oh, Gluster is going to compete with this, compete with that. Well, it really doesn't. It's a complete different world. It's a little confusing, though.
It is. It is.
And so opensourceforamerica.org helps educate people in terms of what open source can do, primarily for the federal government. That's right?
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
And so open source community, and I think Gluster also has a community here. So I see a theme here. There's a lot of community-based software
that
Red Hat seems to be involved
in. Yeah, we talk about community a lot, and it's because communities are what we owe our success to. When you're a proprietary company and you want to build a product, you hire 400 guys and gals and tell them to build the product and get them a project schedule, and off you go. You're off to the races. With Red Hat, we have a slightly different tack. Yes, we have product schedules and we have ship dates and all the rest of it, but a lot of the people who write software that we support don't work for Red Hat. So that means being a good citizen in a lot of these open source communities. So it means putting people in charge of things that we think are important. And working together with these open source communities, we can actually not only improve the software, but it makes us capable of actually supporting that software for an extraordinarily long time. One of the reasons why people buy Red Hat subscriptions to the Red Hat service is that we support software for 10, 13 years sometimes. I tell you, if an open source developer has shipped code 13 years ago, they can't even remember that they shipped it. They don't even know what was paying attention to. So one of the things that Red Hat does is pay attention to that software that's 10, 13 years old and make sure that it remains kind of safe, secure, you know, easy to use.
10, 13 years ago, I was doing live radio at Fosse, mm-hmm. and we had a few people in the audience, and it was a lot, it was 100 people in the audience, and someone had this big, huge a penguin stuffed animal, and we had to get our pictures taken with the penguin, and we tossed it around, and my kids thought it was real cute, I guess. I don't know the word. And if you research Red Hat and think about Red Hat, you may think, well, 10 years ago, Fosse, desktop, and Red Hat, and I always keep thinking of Red Hat and servers. If you read this week's Network World, they talk about Linux and the desktop.
Yeah.
And people maybe try to say, well, you guys, your goal 10 years ago was to own the desktop. I don't know if Red Hat's goal 10 years ago was to own the desktop. I think the goal 10 years ago was to let people know that Red Hat existed. I mean, I remember the folks in North Carolina talking to them and writing about them, and, mm-hmm. and they said, look, this is just an option. We're just letting people know this is what we do. Mm-hmm. And some people may misinterpret that. People say, well, Red Hat can't be a success because it's not on every desktop in the federal government. Give us your opinion on this whole desktop and server divergence within Red Hat.
Yeah, it's funny. So the Linux community for years, and for good reason, has been advocating for a desktop that will, you know, that will match Windows, right? An actual true blue Windows competitor. And there are Linux companies that are devoted to producing a desktop like that. Red Hat took a different tack when we were founded back in the 90s. We actually saw the opportunity up on the server side. We said that that's where the money is, and that's actually where the biggest problem is. At the time, there were these proprietary, expensive operating systems that were tied to hardware, right? So if you bought a piece of HP hardware, you had to use HP's operating system. If you bought Sun's hardware, you had to use Sun's operating system.
I remember real well.
That's right. And so what Red Hat did, which I think was this is where our success came from, and where it comes from today, too, is moving people off of these Unix systems and onto Linux. And you know what's funny? Is when people move to Linux, some of their biggest cost savings doesn't come from the software. The biggest cost savings comes from their ability to go negotiate with hardware vendors, right? So now that I'm running Linux, I can run Dell 1 year, HP another year, and IBM the next year. And so now customers really enjoy having a knife in their hand when their hardware guy shows up.
I think many listeners who are maybe under 30, they don't realize that this is the way software has evolved over the years, where Sun was known as a hardware company, and you'd,
that's right.
You'd buy hardware from Sun, and you'd get PC World, and they'd evaluate a Sun server versus another type of server, and they talk about metaflops and petaflops and all this stuff. No one talks about that anymore. No one even, when you think of Sun, you don't think of that anymore. You think of something completely different. And it's just, it's a transition, I think, that some of my listeners, they don't even realize the origins of Red Hat and where it came from.
Well, this is how technology adoption works, right? Things start off as something that's bespoke and proprietary and specific to a particular person or a particular company. Eventually they get competitors, and eventually, those competitors lose the ability to differentiate between each other, and eventually that technology becomes a commodity. So you can actually draw a straight line from the Unix folks in the 90s to the Linux folks at Red Hat, and now we're taking Linux and we're moving it off into the cloud, which is kind of a perfect commoditization, right? And so what's beautiful about this is I didn't think this when I started at Red Hat, but now working here for 7 years, I now realize what Red Hat does for a living. What we do is we commoditize overpriced software, and we do it using open source process.
Hold that thought. When we come back, we'll talk more about Red Hat and open source software. You are listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy here on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Today, we are speaking with Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector.
This is Mike Tanner, VP of Federal for Hitachi Data Systems. Many companies out there are touting the best solutions in data center consolidation. At Hitachi, we believe in the power of a satisfied customer.
Within 1 year, our organization had recouped more than the purchase price and had exponentially expanded our storage environment without incurring additional software or hardware costs.
Learn how Hitachi can leverage storage virtualization solutions to improve return on assets, all while making your agency FDCCI compliant. Visit Hitachi at hds.com/Fed.
Arming your home with a security system gives you peace of mind. Now get peace of mind for your wallet. Ackerman Security will monitor your system for $18.95 a month.
I was
was paying too much for monitoring. So I made the switch to Ackerman Security's Certified Monitoring Center. Now I'm paying only $18.95 a month with no cost to switch.
Call today and get 2 months of Ackerman's award-winning basic monitoring free. 888-999-1070, AckermanSecurity.com.
Hi, this is Wayne Zell, host of Blueprint for Wealth, every Saturday here on 1500 AM at 10 AM. Join me this week for my special guest, Mike Baker of the Baker Parekh Group at Morgan Stanley. He'll talk about his special retirement planning tools. Blueprint for Wealth is brought to you by Odin Feldman and Pittleman, a full-service law firm located in Fairfax. If you'd like to know more about the firm, visit us on the web at www.ofplaw.com.
Public, private, hybrid? The options for moving to the cloud are many, and mandated transition deadlines are right around the corner. Industry leaders GTSI and HP have established a cloud center of excellence in Herndon, Virginia, specifically focused on navigating the cloud options available to agencies and to help you decide on what approach is best for your requirements. Get your head in the cloud. Contact a GTSI HP cloud computing expert and reap the benefits of increased operational efficiency and decreased program costs. Email hpccoe@gtsi.com today.
I'm Linda Carr, President and CEO of Advanced Alliance Solutions Team, AAST, a joint venture of small businesses dedicated to providing the federal government with exceptional services under the GSA Alliance Small Business Contract. Our goal is to team with small, medium, and large IT companies to deliver needed services to the federal government. Please contact us at advancedalliant.com for more information on potential Alliance Small Business teaming opportunities. That's advancedalliant.com.
Please join the American Federation of Government Employees for its series Inside Government, brought to you in part by Purchasing Power and MetLife. The weekly program gives you the real story on what's happening inside federal agencies and the rights of federal employees. Hear the latest from the nation's top lawmakers, celebrities, journalists, union leaders, and federal workers. Don't miss AFGE's Inside Government, Friday at 10 a.m., right here on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
What is transformational leadership? How have government leaders successfully led transformations and what they considered before undertaking such initiatives? Join host Michael Keegan next week as he explores these questions and much more with Bob Reasoner, author of the recent IBM Center report, A Leader's Guide to Transformation, on the Business of Government Hour.
When lives are at stake, you need technology you can count on. FLIR Systems' legacy of life-saving thermal imaging sensors continues through their offering of full-spectrum chemical, biological, radiation, and explosive threat detection systems and beyond-the-fence perimeter security solutions. Visit FLIR.com to learn more. FLIR Systems, because it's not just your job, it's your life.
The Federal Drive is sponsored by LearningTree International.
LearningTree International is the number one provider of IT classroom training to the federal government. They provide high-quality instructor-led IT and management training to government professionals and contractors at all levels. Call 1-800-THE-TREE or enroll today at learningtree.com/gov. That's learningtree.com/gov.
The Federal Drive, brought to you by LearningTree International, airs weekday mornings from 6 to 10 and online at federalnewsradio.com.
This is Mark Amtower. For 27 years, I've advised hundreds of large and small contractors on the best marketing tactics to reach key government buyers and influencers. Collectively, my clients have made billions of dollars by maximizing the value of their contracts. If you need to maximize the value of your GSA schedule, GWAC, or IDIQ, or you need to raise your overall visibility in the government market, we need to talk. Make certain your marketing budget pays major dividends. Contact me at federaldirect.net.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio.
I would rather give an ostrich a pedicure than play this.
Your turn with Mike Causey, Wednesdays at 10 a.m. only on Federal News Radio. Check out Mike's column, The Federal Report, weekdays at federalnewsradio.com, or sign up to have Mike's daily column delivered directly to your email.
You know, they're probably going to find out in 20 years that carrying one of these in your wallet causes your buttocks to fall off.
Mike Causey on Federal News Radio, 1500 a.m.
Welcome back to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. Today in the studio, we have Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist for Red Hat Public Sector. If you are a Twitter person and you want to follow Gunnar on Twitter, let's repeat what your Twitter, what's your address on Twitter?
It's Ghellekes, Ghellekes.
Yeah, so there's a plural on the end of that. And you can follow me. I'm at Ray Gilray. Some guy named Gilray in Ireland took my name, so I got to come up with some Ray Gilray thing, you know? I mean, I got to go and track that guy down. During the break, we were talking about Red Hat and this article about desktop and Linux. I mean, I don't think that the goal was to have a penguin on every screen across the whole world. I think Red Hat kind of defined their market as the world of servers and improving security, improving speed in that area, and didn't, you know, list a corporate goal 10 years ago to own the desktop. It just, some people might think that. I think it's almost an implied goal.
Yeah, the desktop is a very difficult business. It's difficult to keep people happy. And frankly, you know, the margins aren't that great. Now that said, we're actually doing some tremendous work on the desktop. We actually have a crackerjack desktop engineering team who are constantly trying to improve it. So I wouldn't say that we've abandoned it in terms of our engineering effort, but right now it's not kind of a market focus for us. There's plenty of work to do in open source middleware, in open source storage appliances, and in on the server side of enterprise Linux.
And people are talking about a post PC world. So I mean, it sounds like, you know, it's the Titanic, and you're polishing the brass rails on there, going, "Hey, we're gonna get you a nice big desktop. What do you think so far?" As your kids are walking out the door with an iPad, and they're watching the movie or the TV show they missed last night. Mm-hmm. What's happening in the community? I mean, my kids don't have anything with desktops anymore. It's just all on the road and go somewhere, do this, mm-hmm. iPad this, notebook that, and email. That's like Ben Franklin stuff. It's crazy. What I try to do is I try to ask a 10-question survey to all my guests to find out if they're actually card-carrying nerds or not. And that's the part of the show right now. I'm going to ask you these 10 questions, and my listeners can decide your level of nerdiness. So what was the year you bought your first computer?
So the first computer I had was in 1983.
Ooh, that's respectable. That's pretty respectable. Yeah, that's almost a build your own one.
So yeah. It was, and I have to thank my mother. Mother's Day is coming up, so I'm going to thank my mother for she was working with the early days online services like Dialog and the rest of them, and
CompuServe
exactly. And so she had actually purchased, it was incredible, a computer right there in our own house. And I think if she hadn't done that, I would certainly not be where I am today.
Many listeners don't know that Xerox actually had a store in 1983 where they sold their own brand of computers with their own operating mm-hmm. system. Mm-hmm. And mm-hmm. It's just a different world. The year of your first cell phone?
1999.
A little late, but
okay. Yeah, I held on. Yeah.
And you have a Twitter feed, yes? You want to repeat your Twitter feed again?
Yeah, Ghellekes, Ghellekes.
Great. And do you have your own blog?
Yes. Yep. Technology job is no excuse.
Okay. And do you have an online personal backup service you use?
I do. So I use Git, which is a distributed version control system. So still super nerdy. And at home, I've actually got I have a Drobo, which actually runs Linux inside. And these this storage server creates a redundant copies of all my data.
Ooh, you're getting
a lot
of nerd points here. Boy, you have the pocket protector and a dirty shirt and about the opposite of what you look like. What kind of smartphone do you have?
Android.
What a coincidence.
Yeah.
A number of apps on that Android?
Oh, geez. Probably 30.
30? Well, 30? That's respectable.
I keep it down to a minimum. It becomes a distraction otherwise.
Mm. What kind of tablet device do you have?
I have this amazing Asus Transformer, not a paid endorsement. This thing is remarkable. It's an Android tablet that snaps into a keyboard, so it turns into a netbook when I need it to. I love it.
ASUS?
ASUS.
Yeah, they made motherboards for old-fashioned personal computers for many years, and they had great reliability. I tell you, they really did. What social networking sites do you participate in?
Actually, Twitter. That's about it.
Facebook. No,
I'm
LinkedIn.
Not even on Facebook. I committed Facebook suicide about a year and a half ago. I got tired of keeping up with the privacy policy.
Yes, I avoid Facebook as well. And the last book you read, was it paper or electronic?
It was paper. It was Hemingway.
Me too, but not Hemingway. Reading a book on social networks of all things. Kind of interesting. So, kind of impressive. 83 is someone your age, first computer at 83, that's very respectable. I think that's me all kinds of nerd points. Or new respect from the nerds in the audience who are going, well, he's one of us. Especially with the Asus tablet. That's right, right. He is one of
or,
us.
Or
yeah.
the shaking their heads in embarrassment. Yeah.
The real answer would be, I built my own. That would be the real one.
That came
know?
Later. That came later.
Yeah, that came later. Well, this is the point in the show where we say, well, you know, Red Hat's been just ridiculously successful. I mean, they've come out of nowhere and really, you know, I mean, if you Google Red Hat, you'll find out all kinds of stock successes and growing like 400% in the last few years. Where's Red Hat heading? You know, if it's not heading for the desktop, where do you see Red Hat kind of positioning itself in the next 4 to 5 years? And from the perspective of a federal IT person thinking about Red Hat, why should we think about Red Hat, and where do you position yourself here?
Yeah, so I think like I mentioned earlier, Red Hat is all about commoditizing expensive proprietary systems, right? We want to make stuff flow like water. And so I think the thing to watch over the next few years for us is this product that we've just came out with, just open sourced, as a matter of fact, called OpenShift. This is a tool that allows developers to really quickly get working environments so that they can do their jobs. It's great for developing, you know, mobile applications, great for developing web-based applications, and I think really represents a template for how IT will work in the next four or five years. The idea that we have to hand build all of these IT systems from the plug in the wall all the way to the monitor at the top is, you know, it's ridiculous. And these cloud systems are showing us that these things are commodities now. We don't have to handcraft them. You don't make your own electrical generator anymore. So why are you piecing together your IT systems? OpenShift gives you a way to build and provision these systems with an absolute minimum of effort, total repeatability, and totally automated. OpenShift is very, very exciting to me.
My company works in the commercial world, and we work on a lot of data collecting projects. And what we learned is that if you collect data for example, blood samples, the process is collect the data and measure to a standard and make a decision. Well, you can use that approach with pieces of concrete. You can use that approach with educational universities. Mm-hmm. You can use that approach with, I imagine, with security principles, with the matching equity. So what we've learned is that, you know, there shouldn't be a custom system for blood and a custom system for concrete and a custom system for university. And oh, by the way, a custom system for spark plugs. No, we can't afford that anymore. I'd like to be able to afford that, but people are saying, geez, we just can't spend $1 million on the custom software for our concrete analysis. Is there something out there that might fit? And maybe OpenShift is a tool that people can use and say, well, as a matter of fact, you know, this is it's got a lot of the same concepts as what we're doing over here, and maybe we can use OpenShift to do this quicker and provide it as a service.
Exactly. Exactly right.
OpenShift, OpenOffice, CloudStack, OpenStack, hardened OpenStack. I guess I'm going to have to get out maybe some flashcards and try to get a familiar with a lot of these terms, because more and more people can start using them because they don't have the luxury of custom software anymore. They're going to have to find out what kind of open source project, what kind of open source software they can use to make an inexpensive move to the cloud.
Yeah, no, that's exactly right. You got it.
Do you think there's going to be more education in this area? What kind of a trend? How can my listeners learn more about open source and making their transition away from applications based in a server down the room, down the hall, to cloud-based applications? Where can they learn?
So they can go to obviously they can go to redhat.com. That should go without saying. And actually, they should feel free to hit me up on Twitter. I would be happy to answer any questions they have. And if you're working for a federal agency and you're getting static about your wanting to use open source, or you're nervous, you don't know how to sell it to your boss, go to opensourceforamerica.org. We can help you out.
I think this back channel of tweeting a question to you, you might be able to, on a Saturday, repeat and send out maybe a website where they can go and learn about some particular problem, whether it's mobile security. I mean, you're one of the few people I know who's got a Linux-based tablet. I mean, if there's a person listening who's considering that and has a question about, well, we're going to get support for a Linux-based tablet, you may be one of the few people on the planet or one of the few people in the area here that provide that type of information.
Yeah, yeah, and happy to.
Great. You've been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. We've been talking about open source software, been talking about CloudStack and OpenShift and all kinds of topics here. I'd like to thank my guest, Gunnar Hellickson, Chief Technology Strategist, Red Hat Public Sector. Thank you, Gunnar.
Thank you.
been listening to Federal Tech Talk with John Gilroy of the Armature Corporation, providing consulting, application development, and business productivity solutions on the Microsoft platform. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. Federal Tech Talk, Tuesday mornings at 11, only on Federal News Radio 1500 AM, your source for federal news now.